The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
It's Football Weekly Extra with Champions League. Barcelona, Messi lives, and City exit another competition, whilst in Munich, Robin takes a dive, and so does Arsenal's season. Next up for the Gunners, it's Spurs. Will they be as armless as Big Tim's choice of outerwear? There's all the reaction to midweek and a proper look forward to the weekend too. Big games at the bottom hand at Old Trafford, Man United, Liverpool. There's MLS, Scottish news, and more too in a weekend that's as gripping as Walter Samuel at set pieces in today's Football Weekly Extra. Boom! He's back, Paolo Vandini! Hi, Paolo.
Hi, James. How are you?
Yeah, you're back, and you brought your chums. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hello, and Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
Hey, where have you been, Jacob?
Guardian.
Yeah,
London.
We couldn't get you out of the pod for a while. And now, yeah, and then you disappear for a while. But hey, Paolo, how long is it since you've been with us?
It will be at least a year, because I haven't been in England for at least a year. Well, I suppose I spoke to you on the phone after the Major League Soccer Cup final, so briefly.
But, memorably, yeah. And how, you've been in America, haven't you?
I have. And I was very pleased just now when a familiar face from The Guardian came up to me and told me I didn't sound like I picked up a Midwestern twang. So hopefully I'm still clinging on to my English accent so far.
Right, you know what a Midwestern twang? That sounds quite unpleasant, doesn't it?
Sounds very English.
Yeah.
Clipped.
Absolutely. All right, well, how's it been over there?
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a eventful and enjoyable couple of years.
Right. In Missouri?
In Missouri, of all places, yeah. A part of the world that I have to admit, it was not somewhere I expected to wind up for a couple of years. But it's been an interesting experience. It's very different to the parts of America where I'd spent a lot of time beforehand. And actually, it's a really nice part of America.
Right, okay. But it sounds like you're preparing maybe to come back, Paolo.
I am, actually, yeah. We're going to be coming back in August. And this is something that I only told my family about a day ago. So,
right, okay.
Football
well, now
Weekly
another three people
in on the scoop.
Oh, yeah, and then. Yeah.
I'm going to be coming back in August. So it's time to return to London and not live miles and miles away from big cities.
Right, and big sport, Paolo, big sport.
Well, there's big sport in Missouri, actually. They've got major league sports teams in Kansas City and St. Louis, so they're okay, but yeah.
Mm. All right. What's their soccer team called?
It's not actually in Missouri, it's just over the border in Kansas, but Sporting Kansas City is the local soccer team.
Because I remember when they launched, they were going to be called the Kansas City Wiz.
They were the Kansas City Wizards. They still, to a lot of fans, are the Kansas City Wizards, because that's something that fans don't necessarily want to let go of, is that past.
Right.
So they're like the exact opposite of Hull fans. They want to be called the Wizards, whereas Hull don't want to be called the Tigers.
They don't.
I'm just explaining that for anyone who might not have picked up on what
I meant
there.
Absolutely. Terrific to have you back, Paolo. That's enough from you for now. Barry, let's hit Barcelona, Man City. Here's Enrique Scock saying, what does it take for an English Premier League team to lose and not be heroic?
I'm beginning to wonder, actually. Manchester City are getting a lot of praise for their performance. I thought it was pretty decent, but they were thoroughly outclassed over two legs. And for the amount of money they've spent, you'd really expect them to be doing better at this stage.
Well, as Vince Kompany explains, it's only our third year in the competition, so you really can't expect us to do much.
Well, yeah, they keep trotting out this excuse that they're inexperienced, but if it's their third year in the competition, that means they've played a minimum of 18 matches. How much more experience do you need?
I don't know.
It's a great idea, isn't it? Because football players' careers probably only last sort of in the 10 to 12 year range if it's a good career. So if you're saying, oh, we're only 3 years into it, at what point of your career do you achieve the experience required?
Yeah, absolutely. In other news, Jacob, we were wondering the other day why Pellegrini kept picking Demichelis, and I think we found out the answer.
Yeah, Julian Lescott got himself in a bit of a tangle for that messy goal, didn't he? And he could have given away a penalty after about, well, should have given away a penalty after about 10 minutes, which kind of made the complaints about the foul on Dzeko less easy to understand. But I thought City played quite well last night, and I wouldn't say they were outclassed over the two legs. I think that if you were to take out them, if he didn't exist, basically, and if Pellegrini wasn't so persistent with picking Demichelis, I thought they played quite well in the first leg.
They had chances in this one, didn't they?
Yeah, they had chances when it was 0-0.
That incredible back heel from Silva.
Yeah, and the Zabaleta miss. You know, when a chance like that comes, you don't want it to fall to your fullback on his wrong foot. And that was an amazing save as well from Valdez from the Dzeko header. I thought they played quite well last night. And they're probably a couple of players away from being able to beat the very best sides. But, you know, if they'd been playing, you know, one of the like Olympiakos or a Leverkusen, they would be in the quarterfinals.
But surely playing quite well is the very least, or the very minimum you would expect from a team that has had so much money invested.
Yeah, it is. But then, you know, Barcelona are a team that's played together for years and years, and this team is still being put together. It's a new manager, and, you know, just because they've spent a lot of money doesn't necessarily mean they're going to immediately click. I think that they might look back at that first leg and wonder if they should have played the team they played last night. At least, I know Aguero was out injured for that first leg, but instead of Kolarov on the left wing, maybe had gone with a more offensive player instead of being so intimidated by Barcelona, because Barcelona, I don't think, until the sending off, really looked like they were going to win that game in the first leg.
Interesting. You mentioned Aguero being out injured, and of course he is now again. We're waiting for the results of the scan.
Yeah.
Looks like a hamstring, though. And his point was, is Man City's season looking to be worse than Arsenal's? And the rationale behind this would be, you got Aguero out, you've just been knocked out of your second competition. They've lost four and only won three of their last eight games. And, and they're at Hull this weekend.
Well, it's a slightly premature question, because I think that's probably based on the idea that Arsenal go on and win the FA Cup and presumably also finish in the top four, if that's what's being suggested. As much as you would look at the FA Cup situation right now and assume that maybe Arsenal will go on to win the FA Cup, I think probably lots of people assumed that Manchester City were going to beat Wigan. So perhaps that's a slightly jumping ahead.
I don't know how many people are assuming that about Arsenal, given their recent form in cup finals, which they've yet to even get to because they got the semi-final first.
Yep. Agreed.
Absolutely. But City's season, this much we can agree on, could suddenly take a very rum turn. They are 9 points off the top of the table. They have three games in hand. This trip to the KC Stadium, very much one of them.
Yeah, and
can't argue with facts that, can you?
And you can't argue with having so much of your attack injured. It's not just Aguero, is it? It's like the whole front line is either injured or not scoring, and alternately both of those things, unfortunately, lately for City, and that's exactly the reason why it's beginning to come apart a little bit.
I think apart from the Jovetic goal against Chelsea in the Cup, they haven't had a goal from one of their strikers since the 29th of January, which was the 5-1 against Spurs, when it looked like they were going to waltz away with the league, and since then it's not really quite happened for them.
Wow.
Magredo's shoulder injury, and Aguero, since he's come back, has he played those three games, didn't look fit, and then last night he's gone off injured. So
also Hull gave them a bit of a fright in the corresponding fixture earlier in the season. I probably deserved a point, could possibly have won it, and they're playing very well at the moment. Under Steve Bruce.
Well, notes producer Ben, prepare the Club in Crisis jingle for our Man City chat on Monday. And as for Barcelona, of course, a lot of people were reckoning could be on the verge of crisis. Well, through they go through the quarterfinals for, I think, the seventh season in a row. We'll hopefully be talking to Sid about that very shortly. We just ran into his answering machine, so ixnay on the Sid Lowe intervention at this point. And we'll just move straight on then to the other Premier League club in Champions League contention this week. They were Arsenal. They are out of the competition. They did manage a credible 1-1 draw at the Allianz Arena.
I believe they still are Arsenal, not just were.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Carlo.
I don't know if it was creditable. I think it was fine. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't distressing, but it wasn't really a game at any point that you felt like was going to come into the balance particularly, except I suppose maybe ever so briefly after that goal there was maybe one opportunity where perhaps if Podolski got in behind something might have happened. But it felt a little bit like damage limitation rather than a sort of real attempt, and perhaps that's just a simple question of quality. Arsenal weren't capable of making more of an attempt, but it never felt like, I suppose unlike last year, it didn't feel like there was ever a jeopardy in this situation for Bayern. It was just a question of playing it out.
Are Bayern even better this year than they were last season when, if you recall, they won the triple?
Quite possibly. I mean,
numbers say they are, but do they look even stronger?
They're playing pretty exceptionally at the moment. I mean, I'm not someone who sees the Bundesliga every week, so I'm going more on the performance in the Champions League, but they look formidable.
If you were to compare Pep's Barcelona, say, between 2008 and 2011, they probably thrilled you a lot more than this Bayern side didn't. I think they're much more controlled than they were. They score loads in the Bundesliga, and you know when they played Man City at the Etihad, they were brilliant. But they, I think they give away a lot less chances to sides. They're much more safe at the back, I think.
Yeah, and obviously it's a slightly different situation yesterday, because I suppose they would have approached it slightly with that mindset. Well, last year we did give away a lot in a very similar situation to this, and so it's going to be a controlled and contained performance. But that's exactly what it felt like, was just a sort of relentlessness, a certain, we are just absolutely not going to let you get out of your half, come at us, do anything. We're going to control this and close it down.
They were excellent at the tactical fouls to ever stop Arsenal building up any sort of momentum with the counter-attacks. You know, just foul them innocuously in safe areas, so it's not really that big a deal. You're not going to get a booking. Mm. They don't get a free kick in a dangerous position, and we just stop them playing at all. They do look formidable.
Yeah, everything going pretty much perfectly for Pep Guardiola and Bayern at the moment. They're about, I think, 20 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga, and the team, I think, everybody would least like to face in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. The only minor cloud on the horizon, the fact that the most important man at the club is going down for tax evasion, but that's something we'll look at in this week's exciting paper review.
Franz Beckenbauer said that they're boring as well.
Mesut Ozil, if you're just joining us, by the way, we're now on to the Ozil backlash, where all the people who said that he wasn't very good are themselves not very good for not looking at the bigger picture. Bigger picture including, at this point, Barry, the fact that he was actually playing with a hamstring injury.
Well, that depends on who you believe, really. I noticed yesterday some of the medical experts in the press box decided he didn't have a hamstring injury, and that it was just a made-up excuse. Peddled by Arsenal to account for a poor performance for the £2.5 million failure. And now Arsenal are going to great extremes to peddle this myth by sending him for a scan. And it looks like his imaginary injury will keep him out for up to 6 weeks, if not longer.
Wow. So where do you stand on this? Do you think that they are actually making things up? They're fibbing?
No.
You think it's true? Right.
Of course not.
All right,
he's done his hamstring.
Keep him out for 6 weeks to get one over on the press.
Just to prove some journalists wrong.
It might not just be for that. They might also feel that he's safer away from the firing line, given the level of the performance that he put in some other games.
They did that against after the first leg. They took him out of the squad, and he wasn't injured. But at this time, he's clearly got a hamstring
injury. I think it would be a spectacular act to take someone out for 6 weeks when he played very well against Everton at the weekend. Mm. So suddenly say, right, that's it, we're just going to hide you. You know, if you were doing it for a game and you were sort of going, oh, yeah, and he just disappears for the weekend, then it might seem a little bit more of a plausible line. But
good to get that cleared up. Now, Iron Robin, I'm a bit confused about this because he patently had a bit of a theatrical tumble the other night, but Raphael Honigstein's all over the Twitter explaining to everyone why he didn't. He was actually viciously tapped on his thigh, and that's what sent him sprawling.
It looked like a dive to me, but he does have rather a lot of form in that regard. And, you know, I found watching that game, it was kind of totting up what excuses Arsene Wenger would use to, you know, account for his team's defeat, and that was certainly a big tick.
It was a very good way to mask the flaws that still exist at Arsenal. You know, it was a spectacular dive for which he should have got booked. It was so bad that the referee couldn't even really be bothered, could he? But that's not the reason that Arsenal lost. It's weird to suddenly, they've been well beaten, weird to suddenly start pointing fingers at some guy because he's had a dive that didn't really mean anything in the context of the game. And matters more that they turned up with six players on the bench. One player couldn't even be
That was extraordinary. What included. How did that happen?
He wasn't eligible. He wasn't in their squad. He wasn't part of the squad they submitted to UEFA, the 25-man. So he wasn't able to be. They thought he was eligible, but he wasn't. You know, it's the small details like that that seem to hurt Arsenal a lot of the time.
When you think that instead of that player, they could have had Nicholas Bentner on the bench, which would have saved them and him problems.
The one
who
should have been there was Higuain.
Right.
You know, they should have signed Draxler at some point, but they just keep.
I was having this conversation with someone the other day, and I do think, I mean, Higuain, obviously, I can see it's a very legitimate to look at it now and go, well, it looks like a regret. But I also think we need to remember that when The Guardian did its top 100 players in October and sort of published in December, Mesut Ozil came out as the 12th best player in the world, and Gonzalo Higuain was down in the 50s.
Yeah, so that's official then. And Eden Hazard was 100th.
The point is that the perception of Gonzalo Higuain when he went to Napoli was not clear cut. There was a lot of people who felt like Gonzalo Higuain had scored a lot of goals on a team that was very good.
Perhaps in Missouri, Paolo.
But no, I think there was a legitimate question of, can he be a great player when he's not surrounded by Real Madrid? That was a question people asked about. They asked that even in Naples when he first showed up, even though there was this wave of sort of enthusiasm from the fans. There were people asking in the papers, is he as good as the amount of money we're spending on him?
He's better than Sonogo, and he's better than Giroud.
Yeah. But the question isn't that. The question is, are you going to spend the money in the summer if you don't... I'm assuming not the money to pay for both of them, given that Higuain went for about $35 million again. You're asking the question of which of the two of them is more important to you at that time is the fair question to ask about it.
Mm. That Nicholas Bentner reference, of course, we should mention what was happening to him on the night that he was so viciously excluded from Arsenal's Champions League tie and was thus left to his own devices in Copenhagen with disastrous consequences for a taxi that he was attempting to ride in. Barry?
Not just ride in, by the sound of things. But these are allegations which he has yet to comment on.
Allegations that he threatened the taxi driver, dropped his trousers and basically frotted the taxi, rubbed himself against the car. Georgina Turner posting in, I want Nicholas Bentner to be played by Nicholas Bentner in the biopic. It's an excellent, excellent choice. Anyway, Arsenal on the weekend will attempt to pick themselves up, dust themselves down, as they play Spurs. Wow, in the North London derby. What a delicate time for this one to turn up, for both teams, in fact. Tim Sherwood saying how his players are playing for their futures, and one might almost say the same is true of some of those Gunners as well. The players themselves over at Tottenham have been having two-hour crisis talks. They come into this game off the back of Thursday night's clash with Benfica, which is not going to help very much, is it?
No, and obviously a lot could hinge on the outcome of that game and how well or badly it goes for them. Those crisis talks Sandra was talking about seemed quite odd because apparently everyone just shouted at each other for 120 minutes.
He said every now and then someone would get a little bit too stressed out and then they'd sort of talk them down again.
Right.
But then I guess they'd carry on shouting some more again.
Mm. There's been talk that Sherwood's comments were pretty ill-advised, the manner in which he savaged his team or his players after their last defeat against Chelsea and appeared to take no responsibility whatsoever for it himself. Mm. And I think, you know, he seems to me like a man who doesn't really care that much anymore because he knows he's going to be out of a job.
Right.
He shoots from the hip, Baz. That's what he says. He shoots from the hip. He's not someone who pre-plans these things. He just lets it all out.
Mm. Well, maybe he should plan these things.
He also verbalises everything. He came up with the new word out-desired yesterday as well, which it isn't a word.
Arsenal won the first game between them 1-0 when it was Slavi in charge, but then they also beat Spurs after Tim had taken over in the FA
Cup. Yeah, that's when he played two strikers and no holding midfielder against a very good Arsenal midfield that just outpassed them and outdesired them on the
and he
evening.
Wasn't the thing is he just doesn't have anything up his sleeve, but then he
doesn't
have
any
sleeves.
Yeah,
so
he wears all this sort of sports gear and then but then he wears smart shoes, which is a bit weird.
Right.
Yeah. He needs
to
sort that out.
Straight to the crux of the issue there.
He started wearing that sleeveless one against Dnipro. Suddenly that came out because he was wearing the gilet before.
Yeah.
And now he's got the sleeveless jacket on.
I thought the sleeveless jacket was the gilet.
Oh, no, but this was a new one, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you might have more than one. Anyway, about Spurs-Arsenal, because this is a big game. There's 6 points between them. Win this and Spurs are right back in the battle for top four Champions League football.
Yeah, and I suppose the only other thing that damages them is that goal difference, because it'll be an extra point in effect they have to get because of that. But yeah, it is a big game for that reason, and you just imagine
it'd be a big game anyway because it's the North London derby,
of course. But yeah, you imagine how it could have been if they'd had a better result against Chelsea. But it's interesting with Arsenal because you can think to last season they went to Munich and they got that positive result, and even though they didn't win the tie, they sort of span it into this positive narrative of being able to go on and win games and finish out the league season strongly. Now, they didn't have that performance in Munich, and will it be a slightly more indifferent run from here or not? But it's it's almost the same point of the season for them. It's just they're in a slight, you know, this time they have got a slight head start on it, but they still can't afford to start dropping points, because I think Tottenham will be there and thereabouts at the end of the season.
Well, Tottenham don't really seem to know what side they want to be, because sometimes he goes with, you know, out and out wingers in Townsend and Lennon, and other times you've got Eriksen coming in to try and be a playmaker. Sometimes it's two up front, or you see one just out of Bayor on his own. There's no real fluency at all or rhythm to the side, and sometimes they get away with it because they've got good players, but against the big sides they're routinely outclassed.
Yeah, there'll be a few key changes in personnel as well, because the FA Cup game was the game where Walcott got stretchered off and gestured at the Spurs fans, who responded by pelting him with coins and bottles and whatnot. And Jack Wilshere obviously is out too, and in the Spurs team they've no Eriksen. He played in that game.
Kabul does come back in though after his red card was rescinded from the Chelsea match.
Oh, okay.
But no Dawson. Yeah, which is probably a plus.
People coming in, people going out. And what about Oxlade-Chamberlain? He did at least drive with enthusiasm and menace at Bayern the other night.
Yeah, and he's playing well, and they sort of need him to, because that's what's missing in that midfield at the moment, is someone who's willing to pick the ball up and run with it. And it's something that is a little bit absent from the Arsenal team generally when Walcott isn't there. And so it's that unfortunate position, I think, always for Oxlade-Chamberlain, of having to be the alternate Walcott and having to be this conceptually the other guy who can do that. But yeah, he does give them that, and it's an important thing.
Yeah. Excellent. What's going to happen? Barry, Spurs, Arsenal. What's going to happen?
I think Arsenal will win.
Really? Yeah. Paolo?
I think it'll probably be a 0-0 draw.
Wow. And Jacob?
Arsenal win.
Poof. All right. Well, there's more where that came from, listeners. Plenty more. Hey, it's Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, Jim.
Hi, Sid. Were you at Barcelona last night?
Yes, I was.
Hey, yeah. How was that then?
It was quite good fun, I thought.
They're back, aren't they, Sid?
Are they back? Well, they certainly performed much more like the Barcelona that they wanted to see. It was much quicker, it was much more dynamic, it was much, much better. I still think they look a little bit vulnerable, and the goal they conceded was a classic Barcelona goal to concede. But yeah, everybody's pretty happy this morning.
Messi's back, isn't he, Sid?
Well, I thought there was a moment in the game, and obviously I was writing the, not the match report, but the sidebar, and I knew that unless he was just completely anonymous, it was likely that I'd be writing about Messi. So I was watching him very closely from very early on, and you sort of almost felt like it was going to be different when you saw him in the third minute chasing down Aguero, sort of 30, 40 yards back, took the ball off him, and you could almost sense around the stadium, sort of people looking at each other and going, okay, Messi looks plugged in today.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's now 8 goals in 5 matches in the Champions League this season.
Well, this is one of the ridiculous things, isn't it? You look at Messi and say, oh, he's not playing very well. And his Champions League record this year is absolutely brilliant. He scored in every game that he's played, because, as you say, he's only played 5 because of the injury. 8 goals. He's now only 1 away from Paulinho Alcántara as a top scorer in Barcelona's entire history. He became, I think I'm right, he scored more goals for a single club in the Champions League than anyone else. He's behind Raul in the overall total, because, of course, Raul, then, having left Real Madrid, got some for Schalke. So it all looks pretty good again. I think, despite the excitement and the enthusiasm and people saying, right, you know, this is a good sign and this is what we need to keep doing, there's a small element of taking some advice from Mr. Wolf at this stage as well.
This is a Pulp Fiction reference, isn't it?
Yeah, and let's not get overexcited about this just yet. Let's not pat each other on the back
a little bit too much just yet. Yeah. Nicely euphemised there, Sid. Now, Sid, one game that the fans are surely going to go to is tonight's Europa League Seville derby. Boom. And we can't talk too much about it because it'll probably have been played by the time people hear this. But that's been destroyed. Here's Maxi Kiosko saying it's the biggest derby Sevillano in history.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's the only time they've ever played each other in Europe. And one small little detail, which is, and I must confess, because, you know, so in kind of surrounded by all the Barcelona stuff last night, I don't know what happened with this. But one of the things that was talked about in the build-up to this game as a way of illustrating how big it is that for the first time ever, Real Betis would have a training session on Sevilla's pitch and vice versa over these two legs. And that as a way of, if you like, symbolising how big this could be. But they were saying that maybe this isn't a good idea and that maybe this will cause trouble. And it has been a really dangerous derby at times over the years. Actually, the relationship has softened a bit, and I think the fans are perhaps less confrontational than they once were, but it's still huge.
Right.
And there's the two clubs have done a video where basically they do this thing of passing the ball to each other, though of course they're not passing the ball to each other, they're throwing it off screen, and the next shot is someone from the other club catching it and throwing it, and basically saying, we're rivals, but we with respect, and we get on, and it's all fine. A little bit of protesting too much, but I think there is a tendency now for the derby to be slightly less nasty than it once was. I was there for the game at the Peace One earlier this season in the league, and it was really, really good fun. It's genuinely a really special derby. Probably, I would say, probably the best in Spain.
Wow. All right, Sid, listen, a final word then on the other big Spanish success, or the big Spanish success, if you will, of the Champions League week, and that was Atletico Madrid dispatching Milan 4-1, 5-1 on aggregate. Diego Costa. Diego Costa, do you know, he scores a Champions League goal every 53 minutes. Boom.
Pretty good, isn't it? And the first goal was brilliant. As you can imagine, there are two goals that everyone's likening it to here in Spain. One is the very famous flying volley from Johan Cruyff against Atletico Madrid in 74, probably. I'm not sure which year, maybe 75. And the other is a goal that Fernando Torres scored against Betis for Atletico Madrid, probably around about a decade ago now. Brilliant goal. He's playing really, really well. I didn't think much of Milan, to be honest, but I thought Atletico were extremely impressive.
Sid Lowe there with the latest from Spanish football. Sid didn't think much of Milan then, eh, Paolo? What did you think of the Rossoneri?
I think for the most part I'd agree with that. There was a sort of weird...
15 minutes?
There was a weird period, wasn't there, after Kaká scored, where suddenly, actually, it seemed like the tie was suddenly open and up for grabs, and he had that header which went just over from about 6 yards out, and... There's always that temptation, isn't there, when you see a chance like that, to ask the question, well, if that had gone in, would it have gone differently? But really, over the course of that game, I was going to say over the course of two legs, it's a little bit trickier, because actually Milan did play well in the first game. They did play well, but the second half of that was pretty embarrassing for Milan, really a tired team and a team that just really wasn't up to keeping up for that long.
They just don't make the greatest. Here's the Gazzetta today saying, sotto accusa, which means kind of, in the dock, and they've got everyone there. They've got Barbara Berlusconi, Silvio Berlusconi, Galliani, Seedorf and Balotelli in the locker room. There are those who don't put up with him anymore, and the fans are getting fed up as well. A lot of the reaction post-game was, see Diego Costa, Balotelli, that's what a centre-forward should do. And there's a lot of talk as well, this is going to be a massive clear-out in the summer.
Not a bit unfair on Seedorf, you know, what, about 2 months or so into a...
I think it is unfair on Seedorf. What's interesting, though, is this isn't just people judging him on his results. There are some questions being asked already about the way he is going about his job. And there's been some talk that some people are unhappy with how he has perhaps been mollycoddling Balotelli, perhaps been a little bit treating him differently to the rest of the players. There's also been a bizarre thing that the people are bringing up about him, which is that he's apparently doing his tactical work specifically with one group of players at a time. So he'll work with the defenders, and he'll work with the midfielders, and he'll work with the attackers, but he won't work with them together, and that's been questioned. He's been questioned for relying very heavily on a sports psychologist, which of course is a thing that you get questioned whatever you do with a sports psychologist. You use a sports psychologist and people will question you. If you don't, people will say that you're not attuned to these things. But there are reasons outside of the results. But it is also true with Seedorf, and I don't think you want to knock him too hard because, as you say, he's new and it's his first gig and it's a difficult situation he's walked into. But a lot of people threw a lot of mud at Massimiliano Allegri this season and said he was doing a terrible job. Well, Seedorf has got 4 wins, 1 draw and 6 losses in his 11 games so far, and Allegri had 8 wins, 8 losses and 11 draws. So, not great, but actually better than Seedorf is doing so far. So,
he's pointed out that it's all Allegri's fault. It's a bit like Spinal Tap, whose support act was so bad that they were still being booed when they'd come on.
yeah, it's that's actually a pretty good analogy for it, I'd say, yeah. Look, I'm not willing to make any sweeping judgments about Seedorf yet, but the team as a whole is a mess, and the situation all round is pretty ugly, because you've now got a squad that hugely needs to be cleared out, because it is just massively under the quality required in lots of positions. You're relying on your one-star player being Mario Balotelli, who I stick up for a lot, but right now is just not playing at anything like the level that you imagine for that sort of player to be. If you're imagining him to be this world-class player who's going to drag you somewhere, he isn't that guy right now.
Yeah.
And then you've got the people sorting it out this summer is going to be this weird two-headed monster of Adriano Galliani and Barbara Berlusconi, who clearly are not exactly on the same page on the policy of how we solve this problem. And it does still feel like Galliani's solution a lot of the time is to get in the older players, and it's not necessarily working.
Bizarrely, there's talk of them bringing in the sporting director from Atletico Madrid, actually, so to kind of make a happy triumvirate or something. Possibly that will defuse the situation, I don't know. Among the other moves, well, Alex arriving on a free transfer. He's ending his contract with PSG. That seems to be very much set to happen. And Berlusconi was the one who picked Seedorf, which to an extent makes him ironclad. But people are raising the question of how long his position will be that way. And I wonder what Luciano Spalletti being sent on his way by Zenit St. Petersburg this week might mean, because he's a man who has been heavily linked with Milan in the past.
Yeah, and I think Spalletti is going to be a very interesting candidate to a lot of Italian teams. He's very, very well thought of in Italy, and if he decides he wants to come back, he'll be there. It was also, I've seen in a couple of places, people just casually throwing out the point that Sacchi, of course, came to Milan with Parma and impressed Berlusconi with that. And Donadoni is going to be coming with his Parma team that's unbeaten in 15 games this weekend. What would happen if Parma came away with a big win?
Former Milan legend, of course. Yeah. They like to go in-house, and he is very much part of the Rossoneri DNA. That's a fascinating match. As you say, Parma on the only team that's doing better than them in Italy right now are Juventus, with the vastly superior, of course, finances behind them. Well, very, very interesting that Milan, if you're interested, are currently lying 10th in Serie A, 20 points off the Champions League position, so you won't be seeing them back in this competition for a while.
Of all the stats that are horrifying about Milan's season, I think the one that probably is the most shocking: less than half as many points as Juventus now.
Whew. Now, elsewhere in Europe, Kevin Strootman's World Cup is over. Do you know he completed more passes in qualifying than any other player? 514. I don't know how many games that was in, but apparently it was more than any other player managed in World Cup qualifying. He's now out because he'd injured his knee, and then Roma fielded him at the weekend, and he injured his knee again, or it possibly was the other knee.
It was the other knee.
So that's him out. Poor chap. And a big, big blow that for the Netherlands and for Roma too.
That's huge. He's been very, very, very good this season. Very good player.
Strootman. Yeah. In other news, Rangers have won League One. They're just one promotion away now from a return to the SPL, Barry.
Yeah.
Okay.
But behind the scenes,
yes,
it's all very toxic and unpleasant. Oh, they're still at Ibrox.
Debts?
Well, it's very hard to make head nor tail of what's going on unless you're following it diligently, and it's far too boring to follow diligently. But their PR
man... Can I just say, the laughter is in no way condoning Barry's stance on this, which we will deeply regret, listeners.
Their PR man, Jack Irvine, left the club on Monday. He's a very abrasive man who perhaps shouldn't be in the field of public relations, some might say. Not exactly his forte. Someone from the Union of Fans umbrella group described him as toxic to the club's support. Another supporter from the Sons of Struth protest group, he claims to have been threatened with financial ruin unless he stopped complaining about the club and their PR man.
Wow.
So, it's still a mess there off the field, but on the field they're doing well. They won the title with 8 games to go.
They've only dropped 4 points all season.
Yeah, and in other FITBA news... the Scottish League Cup final is on Sunday.
Absolutely.
And Aberdeen are playing Inverness Caledonian Thistle at Celtic Park. And Aberdeen are apparently bringing 40,000 supporters.
Yeah, Priority Bacon posting with that very information. Mon the Dons, as he say. But, let's hope football's the real winner. And that, in the Championship, Charlton have sacked Chris Powell and brought in a Belgian. And the fans aren't happy, and then you got a 0-0 draw. Leicester have extended their lead at the top to 8 points after a 3-0 win against Barnsley. Who did Birmingham draw 3-3 with? And there was that business with the referee.
Was it Burnley?
Yep.
It was Burnley, right, okay.
And Lee Clark gave an advertising hoarding the full Tamuri Katsbaya when they scored their third.
Indeed. In League One, let's see. Wolves have set a new club record of 9 successive wins to stay 2 points ahead of Orient. And even lower down than League One is League Two. And even lower down than that, Hyde have been relegated from the Conference Premier after losing their 30th game of the season. They were 23 points adrift at the bottom, have won only once all season. How about that? They've conceded 99 goals in 37 games. And at the top of the Conference Premier, Luton Stay 15 points clear at the top. They had a 1-1 draw with second place Cambridge, who are Max Roshan's team. So there you go.
Yes.
There you go. And even lower than the conference premier is the MLS. Paolo, arguably, some people might say.
I like the league. It's a league that is still experiences, in my opinion, a real disparity in talent, which is understandable because you have guys who are earning designated player wages and making a lot of money, and several of whom could be playing in top leagues in Europe. I mean, that's just a fact. Michael Bradley could easily still be playing in Italy, and Jermaine Defoe could easily still be playing in England. Thierry Henry could probably play in England if he wanted to. It wouldn't be an issue. But you've got them playing alongside players who are earning $35,000 a year minimum salary. It may actually crept up a little bit from there, but it's in that category. And so you've got guys who are fresh.
So effectively, you've got players who are, say, Premier League standard alongside players who are what, League Two standard?
I think it's, you know, I have no idea where you'd put the new guys on that standard. It's a difficult thing judging across continents and styles of play. But certainly, you have got a huge, you know, that sort of disparity is what you're talking about between the best players and the worst players. And I think that is it creates slightly uneven games at times. But I think that there's a lot of very encouraging stuff going on there. I think when you look at actually the fact that you had the two teams in the MLS Cup final last year were teams that weren't relying on designated players, are teams that have built these sort of structures and increasingly relying on their own organic youth setups to produce talented footballers and bringing them up in the right way, in teaching them the right way to go about playing the game. And I think it's moving in a positive way, and I think that's sustained in a huge way by the fan bases that are developing in some of these cities, which are incredible. I think one of the fun stats that I saw in 2012 was that the David Beckham's last season there, and the biggest attended game that season was not a game involved David Beckham. It was a game that involved Portland and Seattle with 66,000 fans at it. So
wow.
there's a real community growing up around it, and that's then producing more players that go into it. And I think it's moving in a very good way, but it's still uneven to me.
All right, is Xavi going to be one of these designated players next year? And what would that be like?
It would be fascinating, is what it would be. He, from what I've seen so far, has played this down, and obviously it's sort of out there as a rumor rather than anything concrete. But it sounds like David Beckham would like to bring him there. But I'm sure David Beckham.
Is it really David Beckham's going to be
ready. That was the.
But not to Miami, because they're not going to be up and running for another season or so. Are they?
No, so it won't be next season. Sorry, next season is premature. But that was the most recent rumor on the vine.
I'd heard that he'd be going after the World Cup, but maybe that was a different story.
I wondered on Monday if perhaps he would be too good for the MLS.
I don't know what that would look like. I mean, would he get?
A, he'd be on a team with players who just aren't on the same wavelength as him, and B, he'd get kicked from pillar to post by players who aren't good enough to even attempt to get the ball off.
I think there's some element of that. There are definitely teams and players who take that approach with when they're up against good players. I think that's true probably in lots of leagues, but there's not a high standard of refereeing, and even lower so at the moment, because they've got a refereeing lockout at the moment, so they've got replacement refs in. But there are certainly teams that would do that. I think there's sufficient level of, I think, just tactical improvement and good coaching going on there at the moment that you wouldn't have him being in a situation like maybe Donadoni was back in the days of the NASL, where he sort of would get the ball and look around him and think, I've got no one to pass it to, because there's no one on that level. I think he would find it, I'm sure, certain things frustrating, because you aren't surrounded by the same guys you are at Barcelona, obviously, and that's probably going to be wherever you went from Barcelona. But I don't think he would. I think if someone like Xavi went to the league, he'd be, if he wanted to, a huge success.
All right. And what about the Miami franchise? What's it going to be called? Have they decided a name yet? Vice was a top pick for a lot of supporters, but anyway, it's all full steam ahead, is it?
I think that is going to be one of the most fascinating projects, because Miami has famously fickle sports fans, not just in soccer, but every sport, and they've already had this debacle recently with the Florida Marlins, which is a baseball team, where they spent hundreds of millions of public money to help build this new stadium, which is now not even filling up for any sort of consistent basis. So he's got a real battle on his hands just to convince them to...
Why is that? Is it because the weather's just not conducive to sitting in a stand watching sports?
I don't know. I genuinely couldn't tell you why the Miami sports fan has this reputation and this... I guess, part
of
being...
Is it too sweaty down there? That's my contention.
I think that's maybe some element of it, but you can design stadiums to get around that. You don't have to have a stadium with no roof. And,
could they not play their sports in winter instead? Well, that's traditionally done in these environments.
The timing of the league season in America is a subject that has been discussed plenty, because there are lots of teams where... parts of the country where it gets very, very cold in the winter, and we've now got the MLS Cup final being played in December, and indeed in Kansas City it was absolutely freezing when they played the Cup final. And is that the ideal conditions for your showpiece? Would you be better off playing the game aligned with the European season, taking a long winter break to get through that period and going the other side? It's something that's talked about, but I think Miami, you can certainly make the case that they'd be a lot better off not playing in the summer.
All right, this just in on the Miami name news. Producer Ben says it's currently between the Miami Vice and the Miami Current. Miami Vice it is.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty easy decision,
Miami
doesn't
Current,
it?
Miami Current, that's rubbish.
But is it really appropriate to name a football team after a prostitution and drugs racket? Because that's what Vice is.
It's also... a tool for exerting extreme pressure on something you introduce
as well. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they're naming it after the magazine.
Right,
there you go. Well, that's enough MLS for now, Sadie, because it's time for that musical thing, and then boom, we're back in the Premier League for an exciting weekend featuring such delights as Man United Liverpool. Now. Well, you can divide the fixtures up into three categories this weekend. You've got your others, like Stoke West Ham, Aston Villa Chelsea. Do you see Chelsea coming in crop up there at Villa Park?
They've had a bit of trouble there in the past, some occasionally, Chelsea, but Villa, until that 4-1 win over Norwich have been fairly poor recently.
Right.
And Chelsea have had a nice week off.
And Stoke West Ham, Jacob?
What? No.
No. Okay. Well, that's one category. Then you've got your other category, which is Man United Liverpool. We'll come to that in a second. And then you've got your relegation affecting fixtures. Now, we did already talk about Hull Man City. So let's move on then to Fulham Newcastle, where Alan Pardew won't be making an appearance because he's now got a 7-game ban, the first three of which are stadium bans, so he's not allowed to set foot at Craven Cottage.
It's a shame, actually, because it's the nicest stadium in the country.
Right, he could have that walk.
He could
up.
Do the walk, yeah. Walk and sort of go to the... Is he allowed to buy a ticket?
You're not allowed in the stadium. I'm going to say no, he's not.
So what, if he went up to the ticket office, say...
Yeah, he'd say, not tonight, son.
Well,
apparently he's going to watch a feed in a local hotel, which, you know, could mean he's sitting in the restaurant, or that he's actually got a stream of the game coming in.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway,
Could he float over the stadium in a hot air balloon?
I believe he could. There's absolutely
parachute
nothing in
down.
The. Yeah.
No, no. I'd just watch it from above.
Or if
because I reckon that would be an excellent view for a manager.
For example, if they were to be playing Stoke away, he could be one of those people on the top of the double decker bus that sort of stops just on that corner of the Britannia Stadium, which gives you a view of the. You're just saying. Anyway,
that's a philosophical question, though. How high does the stadium go? Does it only go as high as the roof, or is there a theoretical space above the roof of the stadium that is still? I mean, just if you're an
is it
inch
full
above
of air space, like
yeah. I bet Newcastle's lawyers are going over this as we speak. Fulham, of course, have problems of their own, lying as they do, bottom of the table. Still, Duke de Blanges posts in saying Felix Magath will be all right once Danger Mouse comes in and saves him again. Crumbs to him. Ah, dear. Is the jig up for Fulham? There's still only 4 points, is it? Still only four points.
Pretty tight, but they're pretty rubbish.
But they need to get some points. That's the issue.
Well, here's, against a rudderless Newcastle.
Newcastle won their last game 4-1 away from home, didn't
right.
they? Just Fulham are useless.
Hmm. All right, what about Sunderland, who are in the position immediately above them, 19th, as it's known? They're hosting Crystal Palace, and that's another big game, because Crystal Palace, for all their daring do under Tony Pulis, are only 2 points above the drop. Sunderland, Crystal Palace, Barry.
Yeah, Sunderland won just one of their last 7 at home. They've lost 18 of their last 26 away, Palace have. And it's the joint lowest home scorers against, I think, the lowest away scorers in the league. So I'm not expecting a classic. And it's getting to the point that there's really no point in trying to predict how Sunderland will play because they're so erratic.
Hmm.
Not just from game to game, but even from 20-minute spell to 20-minute spell in games. If they play well, I've no doubt they could have the beating of Palace, but I wouldn't have any confidence in
predicting it. Which could drop Palace right back in the thick of that relegation battle. As I say, there's still just 2 points off it. The other team in the bottom three at the moment are Cardiff, but only by goal difference behind West Brom. Cardiff are going to be at Everton, who haven't been doing too well since New Year, but you would figure that they would get the win.
They played well against Arsenal last week. They might not have got a result, but they played well. I mean, they're a good team.
Right. West Brom, meantime, are heading down to Swansea, whose home record is not what it used to be, but then again, West Brom still haven't won under Pepe Mel.
Who's still their manager.
Who is still their manager, it's true. And their captain, Chris Brunt's out for 6 weeks with an knee injury, so that doesn't look good, does it?
Nice, good play.
And the other game, which is sort of to do with the relegation battle, because it involves Norwich, and they are only 4 points above the drop, so still very much in the thick of it with 9 games to go. Did you realise, how many times do you think Southampton have won in their last 8 home games? Last 8 at St Mary's, how many times have they won?
One.
Jacob, that's spooky.
West Brom.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Are they going to make it 2 in 9?
Norwich are rubbish away from home, mostly. Southampton have kind of packed in for the season now, but if they play well, then they're still a very good side.
Right.
So, you know, Norwich's hope would be that Southampton aren't bothering.
Of course, so the Saints will be galvanised by the arrival of an Olympic champion.
Yeah, the new chairman.
Ralph Kruger.
Ralph Kruger, yeah.
Yeah. He's a former NHL player and coach and a consultant to Canada's gold medal winning football team. Oh no, it's ice hockey. He's an ice hockey player, so he's nothing to do with football at all then. Still, some things just go across the different disciplines, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully he won't, you know, do a Clive Woodward and try and manage the team.
Well, that pretty much wraps it up for today's Football Weekly Extra. Except, Jacob, except for Man United Liverpool, that's right. Wow. Well, where to start with this one, Barry? If David Moyes loses,
it's a massive, massive game for both teams, isn't it? It's the first time, or it's only the second time in, I think, nearly 25 years that Liverpool have gone to Old Trafford leading United in the Premier League table.
Wow.
And I think the last time, which was 96, it was only after like a 7 or 8 games or something. So, you know, it was quite early in the season. So, I mean, if Liverpool win this, I'd say United supporters will be A, not entirely shocked, and B, it will really hammer home how much trouble they're in terms of not recovering from the departure of Fergie, in terms of how many players they need to get rid of and to bring in. And obviously, if United can win, it's a huge fillip for them.
Well, indeed.
I can't see them doing it.
Well, United, after their defeat to Olympiakos, who they play again next week, you know, maybe they'll have one eye on the Champions League and that sort of thing. But can they get the win in this one, then?
If they still have the players who could win you a game, you know, Van Persie, Rooney, and whether Van Persie will play remains to be seen. Especially,
why wouldn't he play, Jacob?
People are getting in his way, so move him out of the way and play Danny Welbeck instead, who hasn't got the same goal threat, but is quick and makes a lot of space with his movement. I think it's quite an underrated player, Danny Welbeck.
Was it in the West Brom game when he demonstrated, for anyone who hadn't caught up with exactly what he was talking about people getting in his zone, Wayne Rooney was standing innocently in the box and Ron Van Persie just basically just ran straight into the ball, fell over as if, you see the problem?
Yeah, but then he went off and they scored 2 goals, didn't they?
Yeah.
Or at least Welbeck scored when he came on. But it's whether he'll play Mata and Januzaj as well, or will he go for the boring, safe option of dullards like Young and Valencia instead of one of them.
Carl Anders posts in saying, given the rather pathetic and meek images of David Moyes this season, do you still think he's the hardest manager? Barry, what do you think?
No, I don't, no.
There you go.
I think, he's shown a hitherto unseen frailty.
Who is now the hardest manager in the Premier League?
Paul Lambert.
Oh. Tony Pulis, surely. I'd have Pulis over Lambert.
I wouldn't mess with Gus Poyet either.
Oh, right, yeah, Gus Poyet's a good shout,
I don't know if he's hard, but I feel like Jose might just fight dirty enough.
With a finger in the eye tactics.
Yeah, I think.
Nah, I reckon he'd back off pronto.
Be yelping behind someone bigger.
Yeah, not the face. Anyway, back to the topic in hand. So there you go. So Man United, Liverpool, which way is it going to go?
I think Liverpool will win.
Really?
Yeah, I think they're a better team, and yes, United have played a little bit better lately, and yeah, but it's not exactly a large sample size. Liverpool are a better team; they've been better for most of the season. I know it's at Old Trafford, but I think they'll win.
I think maybe what you worry sometimes with Liverpool is when they go away from home to the big sides, they haven't, apart from the Spurs game, they won, what was that, 5-0, AVB's last game when Spurs were in absolute shambles, even more so probably than they are now. They've lost to Chelsea when they played well but lost. Lost to City, played well, lost. Lost to Arsenal, drew with Everton. So, you know, it's not beyond the...
But that's against the big sides. This against Man United.
Yeah, no,
and it's another occasion for Suarez to take on Evra. Will he be fired up for this one?
Yeah, he will. And so will Sturridge. Yeah.
I think you mentioned it yourself there. You know, they played well in all those games. They also played well in that Arsenal game they lost. And it's a question of maybe some of not getting the rub of the green and some of just playing against good teams. I think the difference is if they play that well against United, they'll win.
Yeah, probably,
All right. Steven Gerrard, because of course Liverpool had the weekend off. They haven't played since they beat Southampton 3-0 down at St Mary's, so that was, kind of Man United's neighbours in mid-table. Steven Gerrard took the occasion to go off on holiday to Portugal, where, how about this, he sat on a table next to producer Ben's parents at a steak restaurant. Who is he with? Teddy Sheringham.
Playing poker.
I don't know. They might have taken a break from that kind of thing. In the crazy world of football, this too has taken place. Well, we look forward to all those games, and you, of course, can get our verdicts on them on Monday when we return with Football Weekly. In the meantime, a pay-per-view with special Champions League reaction and a bit on Uli Hoeneß and that will be up on Friday, or Thursday night, if you're very lucky. It only remains for me to say thanks ever so much, Paolo Bandini. Looking to seeing a lot more of you when you return from stateside. Cheers, Barry. Cheers, Jacob. Cheers, producer Ben. Cheers, listeners. Have a super weekend. See you Monday.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code Guardian.